Welcome to a Listen to Older Voices Golden Moments program. I'm brought to you through the Toorak Times. This is a repeat program from our archives that we believe has merit enough to rebroadcast so that the story and the person's life can be shared with those who may have missed it the first time.
Hello. I'm Rob Greaves, and welcome to another program in the award-winning series of Listen to Older Voices. This is part one of a three-part program featuring the life and times of Val Waller. Born in 1935, Val is able to clearly recall events from the age of three. Val's story is not only interesting, but is well told, almost in the style of the traditional storytellers. Losing her father at a young age, when he died in a Japanese prisoner of war camp in Sandakan, was traumatic to her mother and sad for her as the daughter. We learn that her mother was an extremely kind person, and we can conclude as Val tells the story that much of her mother has rubbed off on her. In this week's program, Val takes on a journey of memories through her early life, clearly recalling incidents and events and retelling them in a most entertaining manner. This week's program concludes with the story of how she came to be an airline hostess with TAA, a story in itself worth telling, and I know you'll enjoy it. Now, here I am, talking with Val.
First of all, Val, thank you very much for agreeing to talk with me and being on the program. And could I start by asking you where you were born and when you were born?
Well, I was born in 1935, and I was born in Eltham, and most of my life was spent in either Eltham or Research. We moved from Eltham to Research when I was about four, I think.
Only child?
No, I was the second daughter of four children, two girls, two boys.
Mm-hmm. Were there many years between you?
There's 6 years between the eldest and the youngest, so.
But that wasn't too many years that the kids didn't play with each other.
Oh, no, and I had lots of cousins around. I think there were 11 cousins all together, so we all played together. Mm. So we were a big extended family, yes, rather than just four of us.
Mm. Val, what are your earliest memories?
I started school at 4 years and 3 months. I did grade one and grade two in the first year, so I was sort of always 2 years younger than everybody else in my class. I think that's probably about the first things I can remember, is sort of walking to school.
What do you remember about the family home?
Well, only that it was unfinished because Dad went... We moved into the house... We lived in a little bungalow, actually, while Dad started building the house. Mm. And then we moved into the house and he was still working on it before he went off to war. So I always remember having an unfinished house, you know. It was never quite ready.
So Dad went to war when you were 3 or 4 years of age then?
When four. I was four.
Four. Mm. Yeah. So he was gone for a great part of your early life then?
I never saw him again. I mean, we used to go and visit him at... Pakapanyol, Seymour, but after that, he didn't come back.
So Dad was a prisoner of war?
Mm.
In where?
Sandakan.
That was a very notorious prisoner of war
2000
camp, wasn't it?
There were 2,000 prisoners and six escape. They made the march and, with no food virtually, and most of them dropped dead on the march.
A very sad chapter of our history in Australia.
Terribly sad, and... Mum died before a lot of this came out, so she had no idea. She always thought that Dad would come back. He'd lost his memory and he was going to come back.
Yes.
But he didn't.
How old were you when you learnt that he died?
Oh, the telegram came in September 1945.
So it was towards the end of the war that they discovered
and
he died?
After the end of the war.
That took that long for them to find out?
Mm.
Gosh.
Well, I think once they were taken prisoner in Singapore, and I think nobody sort of knew what had happened to them.
Of course not.
And the telegram, she learned by telegram that he died.
Which one is your dad? That one?
That one there,
yeah.
Yes.
Gosh, very strong-looking man, isn't he?
Yes, he was a fantastic man, and he had very unpleasant parents. But he was just the most wonderful man, great sportsman, had virtually no education, but he read terrifically, he wanted to travel. His name was Curly, and everybody just loved him, you know.
Yes.
And he used to sing to the cow when he milked her, my grandma's cow. Oh. And when he went away to war, the cow wouldn't let anyone milk her because...
Amazing.
For months they had trouble getting the cow to milk because Dad used to put his head there and sing to her. But he's just a lovely man, and yet he had such an awful upbringing and virtually, as I said, no education. But he was fantastic.
What about Mum? What was Mum like?
Oh, I get very emotional about my mum. She was the most fantastic woman.
Yes.
She looked after her mother. She looked after four children. She looked after her mother-in-law for a stage, which was horrible. But my mother was the most generous woman you'd ever know. And she used to irritate me because she would give away my things to people who needed them more than I did.
Which as a child you don't understand.
No, my favourite dress she gave to a girl at school whom I couldn't stand.
Well, that hurt even more.
Well, because this girl used to tell me that she had my favourite dress. I'd probably grown out of the dress anyway. So,
yes.
But she just was so generous and, you know, she a very laughing woman. And she had the hardest life imaginable. You know, she had a lot of difficulty after Dad died, having the house finished. And then she eventually died of breast cancer at the age of 68. But she made a joke of everything. She was the 12th of 13 children. And, you know, women of that generation were so fantastic.
Yes.
They endured so much. And yet she was always there to help people. And, you know, she'd give her last cent to somebody if she thought they needed it.
Yes. Mm. And so, like a lot of Australian women, she was left to bring the children up and keep the house while the men were away fighting.
Mm.
So she played a major part of your life in terms of your development in your early years.
Yes. And she, you know, she the thing, I used to go to school or to work, and if anything happened, my first thought was, I'll go and tell Mum, get home and tell Mum, and it'll be okay. She was the solver of everybody's problems, you know, I mean, she got cranky at times. She's always threatening to go off with American sailors. But it was all background music.
Yes, yes. Now, what about you? You obviously, you said you went to school and you were always like a year behind the other, most of the other kids.
Oh, I was two years ahead.
2 years ahead.
Ahead, yes. Because I was born in October and I started in February. Must have been 1940, I think. Yeah. I don't know why. I didn't go into kindergarten and I did grade one and grade two. And my sister was the same. And so we were always 2 years younger than everyone else in our classes.
Did you enjoy school?
Hated it. Absolutely hated it. From the moment I went, started to the moment I left, I absolutely hated it.
Why did you hate it so much? Because when you say that, you can see it in your face, you still didn't...
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, because as a child, we roamed everywhere. We just went off into the bush. And the thought of having to sit in a classroom when there was...
The wild world out there
just irritated me so much. And the thing is that the work was pretty easy for me, so... I never had problems with schoolwork.
Right.
And I always did well in exams. So there sort of wasn't much challenge in it for me, and I just didn't have the freedom that I had in the holidays to go on my bike or walk or go off and do what I wanted to.
There was a very free spirit in that young Val.
Very. Mm. I just hated to be tied down to anything, you know. Mm. And I hated sport.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, they made you play sport. And on sport days, I always pretended I was sick. I couldn't do sport. So I can remember walking to school at research. And, of course, you didn't walk on the road. There was a creek bed and you walked through the creek bed. And there were plum trees and there were quince trees along the way. So you ate fruit. And up near the horse trough, which is still in research, there was a big pipe under the road, so of course you had to walk through the pipe.
Of course. That was there.
And there was Miss Doney's store, which was up where the little shopping centre is now. And you called in there and you could get 3 pennyworth of broken biscuits, because biscuits came in tins in those days. And Miss Doney had a sign in her shop which says, Please do not ask for credit, as a refusal often offends. But my mum was allowed credit, so we were allowed credit. We were special. And she had a chair in the store, and you sat down and you gave your order, and she delivered it by horse and cart. So they were my earliest memories.
And this is Listen to Older Voices, Ageless Stories on Ageless Radio.
There was a man from Heidelberg who used to come up to collect wood. His name was Paddy Williams, and we called his conveyance a dray for some reason or other. It was just a big platform, and he used to collect wood and take it back to Heidelberg. So we'd get a ride with Paddy Williams up to school. There were no cars at all, apart from the local bus. So those are probably my earliest memories, going to school in research.
Did you have many friends?
Not a lot. I've never had a lot of friends, but some very, very close friends.
Yes.
But most of them are a long way away these days. But,
yes.
With 11 cousins, you didn't need friends.
Exactly. You mentioned that before. That's right. You've got this big extended family. Now, these days for entertainment, kids sit in front of televisions and computers and iPods and everything else. Nothing like that when you were a child, was there?
Well, we didn't even have a radio. And my grandfather had a radio, and we were allowed to go up to his house and listen. But we weren't allowed to speak, and if we spoke, we had to go outside because you listened to the radio. And we had to listen to the King's speech at Christmas time. And because in those days you had short wave, and we used to call him the ups and downs King because his voice went up.
Of course it did. That's right.
And you were not allowed to speak during the King's speech. Out you went.
The men and women of our far-flung empire, working in their several vocations with the one same purpose, all our members of the great family of nations, which is prepared to sacrifice everything that freedom of spirit may be saved to the world.
So, but my grandfather was one of the most wonderful men you could ever meet. He very quiet, and his motto was, if you can't say anything nice about anyone, don't say anything at all. And if you said somebody was talking about you, he'd say, well, while they're talking about you, they're leaving someone alone. Let them talk about you. Just
some good homespun philosophy.
Yes, and he used to wear a hat with corks around it to keep the flies off. And the favourite thing was he'd go out into the garden and he'd pick a fresh turnip, wash it under the tap and peel it. He always had his penknife with him. And I still love turnips to this day, raw turnips, just
goodness
love
me.
You know, and he always had something in the garden. And he had so many grandchildren that he could never remember their names. So the girls were always Margie or Jeannie. And I'm not sure what he called the boys, but my brother was a bit wild, the brother after me, and his name was Theo. But Grandpa called him Chief Little Wolf after a wrestler at the time. And so my brother became Wolfie, and people still talk of him as Wolfie to this day, you know, after Chief Little Wolf.
Yes. Funny how little nicknames like that can just stay forever.
Yes.
Yes, indeed.
And we had billy carts and kites and toboggans and all sorts of things. You know, we used to carry these toboggans into the bush where there's a big hill, cart them up the hill, slide down, and then have to cart them back up the hill again. But we could do that for hours, you know, and we were just allowed to go off because what was going to hurt us in the bush? Absolutely nothing.
Before we started the interview, we were having a bit of a chat together and we were talking about how radically things have changed in just 50 years, how our parents never thought anything of letting us do that then. It was so safe, and you can't do these things today.
No, you can't let your children go off without knowing exactly where they are, exactly how long they'll be, or giving them a mobile phone so they can contact you.
Yes. So do you think you, in some ways you were very privileged then to be able to have that lifestyle?
Oh, yes, because you didn't have a lot of the stresses and worries you have these days. And my mum never worried about us. Oh, they're off in the bush somewhere and they'll come back.
Mm.
The only concern she had was we might be bitten by a snake. And I think in all those years, Annie ever met one snake who took no notice of me whatsoever.
So there wasn't much to worry about.
There wasn't much to worry about at all, you know. And even later, when my sister and I used to go off riding for the day, she didn't worry. Or she didn't worry when I rode home in the dark at midnight.
So while you were growing up, your mother would have had very little, if any, in the way of modern conveniences. Do you remember her getting her first washing machine, for instance?
Yes, and she said it didn't wash nearly as well as a copper did. It wasn't nearly as effective. She hated her first washing machine. But, I mean, we had a chip bath heater. We had, when I was a child, we had no electricity. And the iceman used to come 2 or 3 days a week and deliver a big block of ice. And that went into this little ice box, and that kept our food cool. And my brother, when he was 10, started accompanying the Iceman, and the Iceman decided that it would be easier for my brother to drive his truck, this international truck, so he could be ready to deliver the ice. And that's what my brother did.
Goodness,
he used to drive this truck. I mean, you know,
yes.
Certainly you wouldn't let a 10-year-old anywhere near any sort of vehicle these days.
No, again, it just shows the amazing differences in lifestyles.
But these were on country roads. I mean, these weren't on main roads.
No, of course
these
not.
These were small roads, etc.
But even so, he must have thought he was pretty good.
He did.
Mm. Yeah.
Yes. He was quite a bit wild, my brother. I think nowadays they'd say he had attention deficit, what is ADHD?
Yes.
But he used to draw on our dolls. He's always pulling things to pieces to see how they worked. And everyone used to say, oh, he's going to be really good with his hands. But he never put anything back together. Never.
What fun is there in that?
No. And my sister and I were given these two really lovely dolls, because in the war you didn't have many toys and it was hard to get dolls. And they had cloth bodies and these sort of hardened faces. And he decided to give them a bath, so the cloth bodies sort of sagged. And whatever it was on the faces disintegrated.
Oh,
and it was just sort of straw underneath, which had been painted over.
I bet the girls weren't amused.
No, we weren't amused, but that was my brother. Yeah, all his life he did things like that.
So you mentioned that you, well, paraphrase, you hated school, but you had to do primary school. Did you move on then to secondary school?
Yes, I went to research until grade six, and then I went to the Catholic school in Eltham for a couple of years, and then I went on to Our Lady's College in Heidelberg, because you could stay in primary school till year eight in those days. And then I went on to do what was called sub-intermediate, intermediate and leaving.
And you've tuned into Listen to Older Voices, featuring the life and times of older Australians.
Was that any better for you now you're growing up? Did you learn to like school more, or was it still a pain for you?
Still a pain, yes. It was mainly an all-girls school, and I quite liked that and got on, because I really thought boys were a bit disgusting. And I got on quite well, but I still missed the lack of freedom. That was what I missed. And everyone thought I should go on and do matric and then maybe go to uni, but by then, I'd had enough.
Yes.
I'd sick of school. So I wanted to be a nurse. And my mother said she didn't think I would cope with it. So she put me into the Commonwealth Bank, I got a job in the Commonwealth Bank, and it wasn't actually a branch. It was the note issue branch of the Commonwealth Bank, where the notes, the old notes came in to be counted and the new notes went out. And we had to count notes all day.
Mm.
And there were, it was this big building in Fitzroy, which is now the, I think it's a Catholic university or something, but it was this horrible building with bars on the window and a guard on the gate. Mm. You had to knock. The guard had to identify you before you could go in, and there were about 150 women and about 10 men, all of whom were in their 40s and 50s, with the exception of a couple of young men. And it was a very protected environment. Mm. I got a bit sick of that too.
Oh, I can
that
understand.
Was very confined. You know, the bars on the window used
yes.
to really get to me.
Yes.
And several times I applied for transfers, and I was told that I really couldn't have a transfer, and told that a little girl like me with no father needed the protection of the bank. I shouldn't really go out into the world. And I think there were all these women, you know, there were sort of a lot of spinsters in their 50s, and they all came to Marysville for their holidays. That was the extent of their travel. And I used to think, I want to go further than Marysville. I'm sure it's a lovely place, but I want to see a bit more of the world. So I applied for TAA. I wanted to be an air hostess, so I applied for a job with TAA. And I went along with a very glamorous friend who kept assuring me that only about one girl in 100 got into TAA. And I must accept the fact that maybe I wouldn't get in.
Because you weren't glamorous.
I wasn't glamorous. No,
yes.
Not glamorous.
Yes.
And in October in 1957, I got a letter saying that TAA would like me to start on the 11th of November. And I rang my friend, "Isn't it wonderful news?" And she said, "I didn't get in."
Chalk up one for the good guys.
I felt it was a bit mean, but I was quite pleased about
that. Yes, yes.
So I resigned from the bank, and the manager said to me, "Oh, well, you've always wanted to get out, but you know, you take care because a young girl like you with no father needs protection." So off I went, and I just, to TAA, and that was the most wonderful time of my life. I had 4.5 years with TAA, and that was just what I needed, you know, to get out and meet people and see things and go to different places.
I think it's probably too good for us just to skim over like that and say, okay, well, what happened next? Because it sounded like it was a major part of your life in terms of a change of direction for everything. So let's have a look at TAA a little bit. And I just caught my eye, just caught got on your model TAA plane hanging from the
John,
ceiling.
John made that yes. for me, yes.
Is that a DC-3?
DC-3, yes. Yes, yes. I had my first flights in DC-3. I'd only had a couple of, I'd had a couple of flights on holidays, but my first working flights were in DC-3s.
Now, they had a reputation for noise and cold. Was it like that?
Oh, noise a bit. But I just loved EC3s. And the pilots used to say that they developed the girls' hips because, of course, when they're parked on the ground, they're at an angle like that and you had to walk uphill, of course, to get to the cockpit. Once they straightened out in the air, it was okay. But you only had 21 passengers and they were your passengers.
Yes, nobody, very personal.
Nobody else to share. So I joined on the 11th of November 1957 and we had to go to air hostess school and we had to have be fitted out for all our glamorous uniforms, we had big epaulettes and great coats with epaulettes on them in those days. And caps, oh yes, the little cap, and at no time were we to be seen in public without our caps or our gloves or our handbags. We were not to run in public because to see an air hostess running would cause a panic, even if you're running for a train, you see.
Right.
And it was a very, very strict school. All the things that air hostesses were not supposed to do, be ladylike at all times, which was a bit hard. And I was told I was going to Brisbane to do my training. Well, I wasn't very happy about that.
Because you're leaving home?
Well, yes, I'd lived in Melbourne all my life, and I loved Melbourne, and I still love Melbourne. And so we went up to Brisbane, and three of us found a flat. We were so impressed with our uniforms. We'd go shopping in uniform, we'd go to church in our uniform, everywhere. We didn't take our uniforms off.
Did you get respect because you were in a uniform?
Oh, yes, yes. In those days, everyone looked up to air hostesses. You know, we were the most glamorous people you could ever imagine. And yet, most of us were just very ordinary girls. And so I went, my first trip was to an overnight to Longreach in the DC3. I had a training hostess with me. And I had to take lunch up to the captain. And it was on blue plastic plates. And he said to me, "That's absolute garbage." And opened the cockpit window and threw it out the window.
I'd like to see them do that today.
Well, I mean, of course, you couldn't open a cockpit.
No, of course.
In a DC-3.
And he threw it out the window. Well, that must have made you feel terrific.
I hadn't prepared them. But he was a wonderful skipper. Bob Lachlan, his name was. And he was so... Now, perhaps I'd better not mention his name in case somebody blames him for throwing out a TAA plate.
Do join me next week for many more funny and informative stories about her air hostess days with TAA and learn why she was forced to resign and how it was she came to be living in New Guinea with a man called John. Next week, part two of Val's story on Listen to Older Voices. Listen to Older Voices is produced by Rob Greaves at the Melbourne Community Support Program on behalf of Uniting Victoria Tasmania. The program is funded from the Commonwealth and State Government's Home and Community Care Program and is brought to you through the Toorak Times.